Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. That sounds a lot like Big Head Todd and the Monsters singing a Bob Dylan song. Well, knocking on heaven's door. So Monday is the memorial to Kobe Bryant. And it made me think all week about heaven. He and his little daughter and the other folks from that helicopter tragedy are up there, along with my parents. What is heaven? I thought all week. They're looking down from above. I love the world of art. I love the world of sports, and I love the world of surgery. Looking down from above. Who would have the nerve to even try to describe heaven as an artist? Well, starting Tuesday at the Getty Museum are 30 of Michelangelo's drawings. Because 500 years ago, at age 33, he goes and tries to paint the greatest painting ever painted, the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. He's painting heaven. If you go on Twitter, at Dr. Robert Clapper, you'll see he actually paints what God looks like in his mind. An old guy with a gray beard. It's amazing. To have the cojones to say this is what he looks like, this is what God looks like, is amazing. Nobody else can do that but Michelangelo. And at 8:15, we're going to talk to my favorite guest of these 9 years, the art historian Robin Trento, about Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel. In sports, where did a tragedy of a 40-year-old basketball player happen before in my life, where that player's gone to heaven? Pete Maravich. Pete Maravich at age 40 left us. He died not from a helicopter crash, but from having a congenital heart. Pete Maravich, one of the greatest bass, the Kobe Bryant of his time. Listen to Red Auerbach, who's won more rings than anybody else, talking about how high regard he holds Pete Maravich.
Pete Maravich, the New Orleans Jazz, in my opinion, one of the great, great gods that ever played the game. So many things he's done from the time he was a little bitty one to make basketball not only his life, but a part of his hand. Now, you see that little drill he did there? That looks simple, but it has meaning. Everything he does has meaning.
Listen to Magic Johnson, one of the greatest players of all time, talking about the no-look pass and a lot of the tricks that he did that made him Magic. Not just Irvin Johnson, but Magic Johnson. The magic came from him studying Pete Maravich.
Boy, could he play basketball, and could he entertain you. You know, the no-look passes, the dribble the ball and then pat it with one hand. That's where I saw that from Pistol Pete. That's where I got it from.
But he died way too soon. This is Jim Huber talking about Pete Maravich and his death.
There was much we never knew about Pete Maravich those precious few years we had him. But more than any one thing, it was what killed him that stunned us most. He was born, lived, and played so ferociously all those seasons with a badly damaged heart. He never should have lived past his teens. That he died at 40 shocked us all. That he made it that far, doing everything to remarkable extreme, should be the real surprise. But watch again, for this is the gift he left us with. Have you found the right word yet?
Here's Dan Rather talking about him passing.
An American original died today, Pistol Pete Maravich. He was college basketball's all-time scoring champion and later a professional star.
On a January morning in 1988, during a pickup basketball game at a church in California, Maravich collapsed and died of a broken heart. He was just 40.
Listen to his wife, Jackie, talking about he's more alive now that he's gone, now that he's in heaven, than he was when he was here on earth.
I remember he used to tell me, he said, you know, when I die, you know, people will forget about me after a couple of weeks. And he's more alive today than he ever has been.
Here's his two sons talking about having the last name Maravich and what that means.
That's where the pain comes in too, because basically bury him every day. And that's, you know, some people get over it. When you have the last name Maravich, it's...
Yeah, though, I mean, you can either run from it or, I mean, you can either, we could either give up basketball and not have anything to do with it, but there's too much love and passion for the game to just, you know, it's almost like our identity, so it's not.
Kobe's daughters are going to hear, as they get older, how truly special their dad was. Just like Maravich's two boys, who are grown now, talk about their dad.
Jason and Joshua were just small children when their father died. Only in the decades since have they discovered what he had really been all about. And that, as much as anything, leaves them clinging today to video, pictures, word of mouth, any reminders.
Are you surprised that he's almost larger in death now than he was in life?
He was so far ahead of his time that the way they play today is almost a mirror image of what he did. And there's still some things he's done that I haven't seen people do today. So it doesn't surprise me that he's bigger than he was. I think him playing today would be the perfect. I think he'd be the most popular player in NBA, one of the best.
He's in heaven now, along with Kobe Bryant. Michelangelo tried to depict what heaven really looks like. But in my lifetime, there was a physicist, an astronomer, who died at age 62, and I'm 62, so I really can relate. His name was Carl Sagan, Jewish guy from Brooklyn. Just a full-on genius, became a physicist and an astronomer. But he had his own clapper vision to describe the cosmos, the planets. And no one ever got closer to seeing heaven than he did, because he was involved in the Voyager spacecraft and kind of when 1988, when Pete Maravich died. This Voyager has been up there for 42 years, billions and billions of miles away. They first set it out to go to Saturn, but it's kept going, and it sends back pictures and information. In 1988, Carl Sagan said to NASA, "Can we take a picture of Earth now that we're this many billions of miles away and see from heaven what we look like?" And all the scientists fought with him, as they always did. But thankfully, he prevailed. And they took a picture from the Voyager in 1988, 89, 90 of Earth. And all you can see on this photograph is a faint, pale blue dot. You can barely see it. And that's looking at us here on Earth from heaven. And Carl Sagan, who was a master with words, put in the most beautiful language what it means to live here from the perspective of heaven. So I'm going to play that speech. Listen to how special your life is, because we all are going to need to recognize death is inevitable for all of us. Kobe died way too young, but we have an obligation that we're still here. Listen to Carl Sagan talking about the pale blue dot, Earth, that you see from the Voyager 3 billion miles away.
From this distant vantage point, the Earth might not seem of any particular interest. But for us, it's different. Consider again that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives.
Listen here where he says superstar, and I feel the need to put in, Carl Sagan never knew Kobe Bryant. He wasn't born then. But put in Kobe Bryant's name when you hear him say superstar.
The aggregate of our joy and suffering. Thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines. Every hunter and forager. Every hero and coward. Every creator and destroyer of civilization. Every king and peasant. Every young couple in love. Every mother and father. Hopeful child. Inventor and explorer. Every teacher of morals. Every corrupt politician. Every superstar.
Superstar.
Every supreme leader. Every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on the mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam. The Earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors, so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot.
Listen to what he sees from heaven looking at Earth.
Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings. How eager they are to kill one another. How fervent their hatreds.
A lonely speck in a cosmic dot.
Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we have some privileged position in the universe, are challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark.
Wow. We can visit, but not settle.
In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit? Yes. Settle? Not yet.
Humbling.
Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is a humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world.
It's the only home we're ever going to know.
To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
On Monday, we're going to celebrate Kobe's life. He's in heaven with his daughter and the other passengers in the tragedy. Michelangelo's exhibit at the Getty could not come at a better time, and I encourage you all to go see it, because he painted the perspective of heaven. How did he do that? Man can't fly. So when you depict man on a ceiling flying, it's pure fantasy. And if all you've got is a paintbrush and paint, 59 feet above the floor on that ceiling, he did it. Those drawings show you his thoughts. It's amazing. We're going to get into it with the great Robin Trento coming up next on the Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. So excited to be joined right now by my favorite guest for 9 years on the show. You can have Dick Butkus. He was great. Isaiah Thomas was great. There's nobody better than Robin Trento. Robin, thanks so much for getting up early to be with us.
Hey, my pleasure.
So Monday, they're going to do a memorial for Kobe Bryant and the tragedy of that helicopter crash. Hmm. He's gone to heaven, if you believe in that, and I do.
Mm-hmm.
To think that an artist can depict people flying around in the heavens,
yeah,
can depict God and what he looks at, like, twice. Not only to touch the hand of Adam, but to create the planets in the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah.
Coming to the Getty Museum is an exhibit where you get to see what is a drawing to a painter or a sculptor. It's the first thought that comes out of the artist's head that comes to be an objective, from a subjective thought to an objective something, a drawing, where we see his inspiration, and 30 of them are coming to the Getty Museum. I cannot wait. I'm going on Monday before it even becomes the exhibit to see them. Tell us about the Sistine Chapel and what it's like to paint someone flying and man can't fly, so it's total fantasy.
Oh, it's just unbelievable if you go to that space and you look up and you see what this man has accomplished, really by himself, because he had some help from assistants, but it was menial help. You know, they helped him with the scaffolding, they helped him probably powder the pigments, etc. But he really did 5,700 square feet of fresco painting himself, way up high in the chapel, on scaffolding, standing with his head tilted back. And he wasn't able to go down every day and look up and see how it was coming along. He had this scaffolding up there. He had a canvas or some sort of a cloth under it to catch the plaster that must have fallen so that it wouldn't harm the floor of the chapel. So he couldn't go down at the end of the day and look up and see how it was coming along. So about 3 years into this project, after he's done, you know, two-thirds of it, they take the scaffolding down and they have to move it to the other half. So he gets a chance to look at it. Can you imagine? You know, he's seeing it up close. So how does he even know when he's a foot away from what he's painting, and he's painting something that's going to be seen however many feet below looking up? If you just try to imagine, how could he possibly have done that? And, of course, he did it with the use of preparatory drawings and cartoons, which are a type of drawing. And some of these drawings are going to be in the Getty show. So, like you said, his mind at work, when you're sitting down conceiving, how am I going to do this? I've got this project. How am I going to actually do it? His mind is thinking in terms of not just the subject matter, but how do I show an arm reaching out? How do I show a body twisting? You know, how do I do these things? And, of course, he was famous for having drawn from life, as all of the artists were doing at the time. But also he participated in dissecting bodies. And his main purpose for this, not like Leonardo. Leonardo really was curious, how does the heart work? You know, how does the womb hold the baby, the embryo? He was interested from a scientific point of view how all of these things work. But Michelangelo really was interested in the muscles and the bones, because he wanted to see, when he's painting a body, how is it that when the body moves, the limbs move, the muscles underneath are going to move. So he wanted to know what those muscles look like, how they were attached to the bones, so that he could get every motion correct. So he would draw these things in his mind, have this image of God creating the world, God creating Adam, Noah, and the flood. He'd have in his mind how he was going to depict it. But he would use the drawings to guide him on exactly how these bodies in motion were going to look.
People need to realize, though, how rare his drawings are, in the sense that there's only 600 of them that remain, because he burned in two bonfires most of his drawings, because he didn't want you to know the work that went into making the painting and the sculptures.
Exactly. He was he didn't want anyone to copy him, for one thing, but he also wanted you to see the finished work, and really didn't want you to see the magic behind it, kind of like a magician. They don't want to give you their secrets on how they did that card trick. They just want you to be dazzled by the card trick. He wanted us to be dazzled by this work and not even know how it happened. But, like you said, of the maybe 20,000 drawings that he would have accomplished in his life to help himself make these masterpieces, about 600 do remain. And so now we get to peek into the mind of the master, which is the name of this exhibition. I think it's brilliantly named.
Yep.
Because these are the preparatory drawings for various artworks spanning his career, not just the Sistine Chapel, but also the Battle of Cascina, which never got finished in Florence, but also the Night and Day sculptures. Mm. You know, different drawings that are different preparatory drawings. Also, he was an architect, the dome. Yep. Of St. Peter's, you know, so we have drawings relating to that as well. So it's just an extraordinary opportunity for us in Los Angeles to be able to see these drawings. And I'm sure the Getty is going to have them beautifully displayed. Many of them are double-sided, so they'll be in the middle of the room so you can walk around them and see both sides.
Because paper was valuable, so
yes,
every single piece of paper.
Every inch of these sheets.
Wow.
Both sides.
What I find most fascinating is, you know, again, we're going to be talking about Kobe on Monday and his memory, but to some extent, being a superstar, a rock star, a famous musician, a famous artist is something that we're very comfortable with in 2020. But what blows my mind is, this is from a book about Michelangelo that says, On the Eve of All Saints, 1512, Vespers were sung in the Sistine Chapel to mark the completion of the painting of the vault. Mm-hmm. In an entry to this effort made in the diary of the Papal Master of Ceremonies, Michelangelo's name was not recorded.
Wow.
Can you imagine? That's why the Vatican sculpture, the Pietà, is the only piece of art that's ever been signed, because in those days, you were a technician. No one was interested in knowing your name or who you are, and yet despite all that, he was a rock star.
Well, we sure know his name today, don't we?
Yes. All these years later, so much of what he does is relevant, including fantasizing about what heaven must be like.
Yes.
From his perspective, I've been playing, I don't know if you listen, to Carl Sagan talking about the pale blue dot. 3 billion miles away, the Voyager's taking a photograph. He pleads with NASA, please take a picture, the only picture we could ever get of Earth from 3 billion miles away. And he does this beautiful discourse about this pale blue dot, which is Earth. He's looking at Earth from the heavens. Michelangelo, when you stand there, just like you say, on the floor of the Sistine and look up, you may be looking at something he did, but he's almost, it's like a mirror, because it's forcing you to look down at your own life, because the reality is when you die, because you die, is what makes your life that much more meaningful, because you know it's going to end.
Yes, yes. The famous line from the movie Troy, the gods envy us because we are mortal, and our lives have value because we are mortal.
Yep.
And the gods' lives are immortal. They go on forever, and they don't have the value of their lives that we have.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about the background, because this is also a theme. We all go to work. There's politics. There's politics at the Getty Museum. We don't even have to get into. There's politics at the hospital. There's politics and wherever you are. But teach us about Bramante, the uncle to Raphael, and how they set him up, knowing he was a sculptor, because they wanted him to piss off the Pope by saying, no, I'm a sculptor, not a painter. I don't want to do this.
Politics.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's...
I mean, isn't that true that they're the ones who said, Bramante said to the Pope, you should have Michelangelo paint it, because they knew he was getting more and more famous, but he would say, no, I'm a sculptor, not a painter, and he would upset the Pope, because he's actually trying to do the tombs for the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing he needed was to be interrupted for 3 years doing this painting, but he forced him to do it, and he ends up making this... Teach us a little bit about fresco painting. Why is it so difficult?
Yeah, why is it difficult? Okay, so fresco painting is where you take powdered pigment and you mix it with a lime-based plaster. And it's wet, and it will dry within a day. So you need to paint quickly. And so you put it, there are areas where you paint. It's called a giornata, because that's what you can paint in a day, because within a day it's going to dry. So you paint it during the day. And then the next day you paint the next little piece, and you kind of sand down the edge that has dried, and you try and make it blend to the next day. It's a very difficult process, and you have to be very mindful of exactly what the shades are, because you want them to match. People can go and look at a fresco, a large frescoed area, and you can see the giornata. You can see where one day mixes to the next, but they try to make it seamless. But it's a difficult process because it dries so quickly. But it is permanent. That's the good news about fresco.
The drawings that we're going to be seeing, what do you use as the ink, as the pencil, as the chalk? What materials is he using?
He starts early in his career using mostly ink on paper, ink and wash. And then he starts to use chalk later on, naturally mined chalk. It's black chalk and red chalk. And... You know, he goes back and forth between these media.
I I have a favorite drawing that's actually in the Metropolitan Museum of the Libyan Sibyl, where she's turning.
Everyone loves the Libyan Sibyl. She's so beautiful.
Because as an orthopedic surgeon, I can tell you there's 17, and I can name them all to show off, but I'm not going to. There's 17 different muscles that attach to the scapula, to the shoulder blade.
Yes.
And here in this two-dimensional drawing, seeing this person from behind, which he ultimately paints on the Sistine Chapel, but this is a preparatory drawing, you almost see all 17 different muscles with the different cross hatches he makes to show you one separate from the other.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite drawing in the, all the drawings you've seen by Michelangelo? Do you have a favorite?
Lord, it's like asking me what's my favorite painting. It's hard for me to do. I can usually say I can give you a top 10, but it's really hard to say favorite. Oh, gosh.
The Battle of Cascina, though, is amazing. Tell us a little bit about that.
The Battle of Cascina is amazing, and this is what I love about Michelangelo. You know, see, he's got this commission. He and Leonardo both have a commission. They knew one another, but they weren't big fans of one another. They were a bit envious of one another, I think, one another's talent. And both of them were commissioned to do a famous Florentine battle scene inside the Palazzo Vecchio. So Leonardo comes up with the Battle of the Young Guardi, and it's magnificent. It's beautiful. They both did the cartoons for these battles, but they were not painted, although I think Leonardo's might be on the wall under Vasari, which is covering it up, but that's still under debate. But Michelangelo's never got finished. But what I love about him is he picked the Battle of Cascina, which is a town outside of Florence in Tuscany, where the Florentines ultimately prevailed. But at the beginning of the battle, the Florentine soldiers were bathing in the Arno River, getting ready for battle. I love that they took a bath before the battle. And they were surprised by their enemies as they were bathing. So what does this give Michelangelo the opportunity to do? Paint a whole bunch of beautiful nudes. And he was so famous for his male nudes, his inudi. And so here are these marvelous, and one of these drawings, preparatory drawings for this Battle of Cascina is in the show, and it's just spectacular. These marvelous nude, gorgeous nude men bathing, being surprised by these warriors coming and attacking them. And the cartoon was copied so many times by so many different artists afterwards that it virtually fell apart. It no longer exists. But we do have copies by these other artists. I believe there will be a copy on the wall by Sangallo of the cartoon of the Cascina, so you'll be able to see his concept for this. But I love that he chose the nude soldiers bathing before the battle so that he could do these marvelous nudes.
Before I let you go, because I know our time and your time, and I can't thank you enough for coming on, Robin. In your mind, I know you have this, and I put on Twitter. This is the picture from the Sistine Chapel, not a drawing, but the preparation in the drawings is there for creating the sun and the moon, the planets, where you see God's right hand pointing forward and his left hand pointing behind him.
Yes, I'm looking at it right now.
Tell us what we should be appreciating in this painting that he's done.
Well, number one, just the fact, as I said before, that he's standing up there doing this. And he can't look at it from below to see it. And it's just so spectacular, the foreshadowing, the foreshortening of the figure, of the finger pointing forward and the hand pointing back. And that God, you know, seen as a man, because if man is created in God's image and likeness, the way the Renaissance masters would see God was as a man, the same way the ancients saw God as Jupiter, as a man. Mm-hmm. So here is this image of God, obviously as a metaphor. There's not a man in a big gray beard up there in the heavens who's commanding things like this. Mm-hmm. But this is a metaphor to God saying, okay, sun, you go there. Moon, you go there.
Wow.
Stars, you go there. And just the drapery and the movement is just so spectacular. And the one of God creating the separation of the light from darkness, the very closest image to the altarpiece, to the altar of the Sistine Chapel, he did that one in one day.
Oh.
That's one giornata. So he had done the entire ceiling, and he was just done. You know, he was finished.
God.
He got up there, and in just one great exertion of spectacular creative energy. He created God, creating the separating light from darkness.
If talking to you hasn't whet the appetite of the Weekend Warrior Nation, I don't know what will.
Oh, come see this show, everybody.
I cannot wait. And I want to thank you again, Robin, for making the time. You're really special. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure.
All right. Thanks so much. That's the great Robin Trento, the Getty Museum, starting on Tuesday. I think it'll be there till June. Take your family. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience to see something that the greatest artist of all time visiting Los Angeles to see these drawings. Oh, my God. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the heaven. Where else do I see God in my life? I see him in the ocean, and I see him in the operating room. We'll do some clapper vision. The number is 877-710-ESPN. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on 710 ESPN. Thank you, John Lennon. Dr. Robert Clapper, right here. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Let's take a quick call. Let's go to Michael in Arcadia. You're on with Dr. Clapper. How can I help? You there, Michael?
Yep. How you doing?
Good. You wait a long time. I apologize.
Okay, Doc. I'll wait as long as I have to talk to you.
Oh, you're too kind. Now I might have to adjust my headset. My head is swollen. What do you do
I
for
love
a living?
Your show,
Thank you.
And I love your clapperisms.
Okay. Not the vision, but the isms.
So I appreciate you taking my call.
No problem. What do you do for a living, Michael?
I'm an accountant.
All right. Oh, you're getting busy now.
My dad, by the way. I appreciate it when you talk about your dad, that he was a carpenter. My dad was an upholsterer, and he actually worked at a hospital as an upholsterer.
Wow.
So, all of his adult life. So,
wow.
So anyways, I thought that was kind of interesting.
You know, when I think of upholstery in the hospital, I watch the waiting area up on the seventh floor where we do a lot of the orthopedic surgery. Now I'm in the new pavilion. But it used to be beautiful, comfortable, upholstered cushion couches. And then people abused it by going to sleep on them. Dirty, filthy, saliva all over the place. So now the hospital has chairs that are uncomfortable that people don't fall asleep on them. And you know what it reminds me? My mother used to say this. The problem nowadays, she says, is that the diapers for the babies are too comfortable. You know how they have all these ads like Bounty paper towels? They have the diaper where when the kid pees in the diaper, it goes away from them so they don't feel like they have a wet diaper. She said, you want to get your kid out of diapers? Get them a diaper rash where it's uncomfortable and they don't like walking around with a diaper. And trust me, they're going to not want to be in diapers anymore. She said, you make the diaper so comfortable, your kid's going to be in diapers for 3 years. And that's what I think about upholstery in the hospital. I don't know why I thought of that, but there you go.
That's fantastic, Doc.
All right. How can I help? What's up?
On my left knee. Mm-hmm. So I was just walking to the train to catch a train to go to work and everything, mm-hmm. and I felt a sharp pain in my knee, and it just got worse and worse.
How long ago?
Anyways, I went. That was on January 31st.
This past January.
Yeah.
And it's still February. And prior to this past January, you didn't have a problem with your knee.
No.
Good. So this is what you did. You're 64 years old. You can get all kinds of x-rays, MRIs. You tore your meniscus. That's what happened, okay?
Yeah.
But you probably have a little bit more than just, let's give you an upholstery clapper vision. You got a little bit more than fraying in the upholstery fabric. You've got a little problem in the cotton or whatever it is that you pack underneath. It's not just the surface, but you have a little altococcaritis going on as well. Here's what I'm going to tell you. Number one, don't let them shoot you with cortisone or stem cells or any cockamamie needles with Synvisc and whatnot. No needles into your knee. My opinion, be holistic. Number two, yes, you've got a torn meniscus. Yes, it caused sharp pain, but you're 64 years old. Let me tell you something. It may not be a perfect meniscus because it just ripped and tore and it's causing pain, just like a blister hurts. But you keep rubbing the blister, it becomes a callus. You show your MRI to 9 other orthopedic surgeons. You know what they're going to say to you, Michael, in Arcadia? They're going to say, you got a torn meniscus. Come on, tomorrow, let's go operate and do a scope and remove your meniscus. I'm going to be the lone voice, not to be a contrarian, because in my heart, I believe it. I wrote a book with Linda Huey called Heal Your Knees. Get a copy. But I'll be the lone voice in your life saying, Michael, leave it alone. Let the blister become a callus. How long should I wait, Dr. Clapper? 3 months, 4 months. Do the pool, do the bike, and let the blister become a callus so that you can say it doesn't hurt anymore. Who cares what it looks like? I just need you to not have pain. If the pain persists and it's May, June, that's different. But I don't want you to shoot it with needles. I don't want you to stop being active, but give it time to get better, and it will. And if it doesn't, God forbid it's locked or it's still swollen massively and it's been months, that's a different story.
Because I listened to your show, I made them get an MRI.
Good.
And I have the impression here.
Good, read it.
So the impression says horizontal longitudinal tear of the medial meniscus.
There you go. That's what I just said. Next.
Exactly. And posterior horn.
Yes.
What's a posterior horn?
That's just another location. That's like saying you hurt in Compton as well as in the San Fernando Valley. That's all that means. Okay.
And focal, vertical, longitudinal versus radial oblique tear.
Just more descriptions. That's saying there's another place called Downey inside in the map. That's all.
Okay. At the medial meniscal.
Correct.
Posterior.
So you do what I just told you to do. That's just confirmatory what you're just reading now. Okay. No needles. Okay. Get in the pool, the bike, heal your knees, the book I wrote with Linda Huey. And you tell me if May comes and it still hurts, you got to call me back.
There's one other thing that they wrote down here. They said associated parameniscal cyst formation.
Correct. That's just some fluid that's collecting. That means it's been there more than just January. It's been there for a while. Your knee is deteriorating. It's altococcaritis. You keep the muscles strong, you'll live happily ever after.
And is there anything I can do in terms of nutrition?
No.
I
used to say that and people didn't like it, so I started to make stuff up. Garlic and onions. The reality is you can do all the turmeric you want. You know what? Forget about it. This is what it's like to get old. The Romans only lived to be 35 years old. Enjoy the journey.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate it, Doc. And I am of Italian background. And so for all the things you do for Italian culture and talk about Michelangelo and even playing Valari at the end of your show, I think I should honor you and dub you as an honorary Italian.
Molto bene. Thank you so much.
Bravo.
Thank you so much for that. And God bless you, Mike. Listen, I want you to find a total stranger today. Do something nice for them. That's how you'll be thanking me.
Yes, sir.
All right. God bless you. All right, Warriors, time to take a break. Last segment coming up where I'm going to tell you, speaking of Italians, where do you get this sandwich called the Supremo? Oh, it's so good. I'll tell you, coming up next on 710 ESPN, the Weekend Warrior Show. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. The game of love. That's what it is every Saturday morning. The great Steve Paulette and I bring you the Weekend Warrior Show. And what a joy it is. You want to know where you get that sandwich called the Supremo? You get it at Domingo's, San Fernando Valley. It's an Italian deli. It is good. Melted cheese, spicy pepperoni, marinara sauce inside the dough that they make the pizza from. It's not even a calzone. It's better. Next week, also about food. You know who's coming on next week? My favorite chocolate Italian ices, Ciao Bella. Somehow Jared Abrams got the CEO of Ciao Bella. She's coming on and be our guest. I'm going to talk about chocolate Italian ices. I cannot wait till next Saturday. I'm going to eat that ices through the radio. And thanks so much for joining me. I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.